It's 5:06 and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll talk to a group of people who are protesting at the Packers game in Green Bay this weekend. They're part of a national protest against the Washington team's logo.
But first, we'll talk about how Wisconsin became a great bicycling state. Biking's been a big sport in the Badger State in the last 150 years. In fact, Bicycling Magazine rated Madison as the sixth most bike-friendly city in the nation for 2012.
But why has biking been such a big deal here, and how did it get started? We want to hear from you. Are you an avid cyclist? What attracts you to biking? And do you think of Wisconsin as a great place to ride a bike? Or do you think there are things we could do better? Give a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
Nick Hoffman and Jesse Gant are with us now. They're co-authors of Wheel Fever, How Wisconsin Became a Great Bicycling State. Nick is chief curator at the History Museum at the Castle, and Jesse is a PhD candidate in history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Nick and Jesse, welcome to Central Time.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, Wisconsin, as we were saying, you know, has a biking history that goes back 150 years. Now, that's a long time. Tell us about the very beginnings of Wisconsin as a great biking state.
Sure. The history of bicycling in Wisconsin actually goes back to January 1869. That's when the first velocipede, which is the forerunner to today's modern bicycle, they're made out of wood and iron, and the first ride actually took place in Milwaukee in the middle of winter. On a frozen street.
Of course, how Wisconsin-like.
by a young guy named Joshua Towne, who was a worker for the American Express Company. And it was such a scene that local journalists turned out and reported about it in the paper. And that's probably the only reason we really know about it today.
And you got to love the name Velocipede.
You got to love the name Velocipede, and you have to love the name Velocipedestrian as well, which is the... first name for the early bicycling crowd.
Well, the first bicycle altogether, I gather, popped up in France. Can you tell us a little bit, Jesse, about how it got to Wisconsin and how it caught on from there?
Sure. They're originally produced in France in blacksmith shops, sometimes in carriage shops. You think about the technology of early carriages; it's very similar, actually. And these mechanics produced these machines and had them shipped over to the United States, where they first appeared in cities like Boston and New York, which have a sort of built-in audience for a lot of the rinks and other venues for where these things are going to be popularized. So in places like Central Park and in Copley Square, you'll see riders taking to the streets and paths and pathways around town, and the popularity catches on fairly quickly, and throughout major cities, they're shipped off to places like Milwaukee, and that's where we first see the first machines in this state.
Well, it's interesting, in your book, there's sort of these two threads of biking history. On the one hand, it seems as though there's this exclusionary strand of white men who want it to be sporty and upper class and just for certain guys. And then other people, you know, Susan B. Anthony's in this camp, a lot of others who thought, this is a great egalitarian method for getting around, and it's cheap, and it's something that is democratizing. Can you kind of untangle those two strands a little for us when it comes to Wisconsin biking?
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's really the two trajectories we trace in the book, and it really goes back to that initial velocipede. We call it a velocipede mania in Chapter 1, because it is this tremendous amount of fervor for this new technology that only lasts for a few months in the beginning of 1869. But you witness it right away in those first rides through Paris, where young people are taking to the streets and generating a lot of sort of animosity in the press because they're young, they tend to ride in large packs, they go to places that are highly visible, and a lot of the times these are young, unaccompanied women. So this is it does have an egalitarian element to the sport from the very beginning. And it's really celebrated for its sort of democratic and liberating possibilities. But because these machines are so expensive and they're sort of reserved for people who have a lot of leisure time, they also do attract people of a different set. And it's the sort of contests and negotiations and accommodations, not only between those two camps of cyclists, but also the broader public, that is the sort of key to the early bicycling politics that we tell not only in Europe, but also here in Wisconsin and sort of in between those two places.
Can you talk about some of the early groundbreakers when it comes to women in bicycling in Wisconsin?
Yeah. Well, one of the really interesting stories, we actually told it last night at a book talk we did at the History Museum at the Castle in Appleton, was the debate over bloomers and women wearing bloomers cycling. And right away from the first philosophy, there's a conversations in many state newspapers about what women should wear while they're bicycling. And conservative views in the United States really expected women to wear very long, flowing dresses while they're trying to operate these machines. And that came really, really challenging when something like the high wheel came along, which is almost impossible to ride.
Was that the giant thing that you had to run and leap on from a great distance?
Yeah. With a gigantic wheel in the front. So a machine like that and then being expected to wear a dress while trying to bicycle is really unrealistic. That was very intentional by these conservative views in Wisconsin to make sure women were not biking. But by the mid-1890s, once the bloomer fashion really comes to Wisconsin, there were special bloomer bicycle suits that women were wearing in places like Appleton, but they received such fierce backlash. There was actually a rumor in Appleton of an ordinance that was passed by the city, supposedly, that was going to ban bloomers. But women throughout Appleton, Kaukauna, and even Green Bay rallied together. They formed special bloomer bicycling clubs that they would, as a group, go out and still ride and challenge these dudes wearing this new special bicycling suit.
Bloomers, huh? And this other group was called LAW. Now, remind us what LAW stands for. This is the other strand here.
That's the League of American Wheelmen. It's the nation's leading bicycle advocacy organization, formed in 1880 in Rhode Island. And it really capitalized. So the Velocipede is the sort of predecessor to the bicycle, and technological improvements in the 1870s and 80s bring about these high wheels. It sort of grows organically out of the racing culture and the competitive sort of daredevil bravado that a lot of these young riders had, where the wheel gets bigger and faster and more exclusionary as a result, because you can go much faster, and it's great for those sort of competitive venues. But then sporting, sort of spotting its abilities for becoming a club activity or a fraternal activity as well, you see the proliferation through England, France, and then the United States of all-male, all-white bicycling clubs. And that's really the sort of, locally, those are the organizations that will give rise to the National League of American Wheelmen in 1880.
Now, another thing that happened alongside this, which only makes sense, is that bicyclists started calling for the roads to be improved so that they could ride their bicycles. And I guess this has never really gone away. I mean, now we care more about cars, it seems like. But tell us about how the road improvement movement got started.
Well, it's really interesting because as early as the 1880s, even when the first high wheel appears in Wisconsin in the late 1870s, people throughout the U.S. are already aware that Wisconsin was a great place to ride. So, for example, when the high wheel appears in Racine, it's two men from Boston that biked all the way to Wisconsin to tour our countryside that are among the first people to introduce that machine to the state. So very early on, people are very aware that Wisconsin is a wonderful place to take advantage of these rural roads. And the League of American Wheelmen, the LAW, they actually really try to promote this idea of good roads. They created maps, some of which are with the Wisconsin Historical Society collections, that actually rank all of Wisconsin's roads throughout the entire state that existed in the 1890s on whether they had really good conditions for riding or very poor conditions. And they wanted to be able to go in the countryside and have very smooth riding, and that just wasn't possible. We had wagon rut-filled roads. Roads were basically just bare dirt, and so they would get washed out with the rain. So it was really challenging to ride in the countryside. So a Milwaukeean named Otto Dorner in the 1890s really pushed for this good roads movement. And I know it's been talked about a lot, even in modern politics, who's responsible for creating the road system throughout the United States. And it really was bicyclists who started this movement, even in the late 1880s, trying to make roads better. And they were interested not only in making the roads better for bicycling, but they were all industrialists, too. And they saw a need for the roads to be improved for commerce as well. So there's a lot of interesting angles to it.
Do you guys see that as bittersweet at all, that the bicyclists are the ones who push for these drivable roads, and now they're pretty much the domain of cars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see these, I love these bumper stickers that say share the road with bicyclists, and they're placed on cars, and the insinuation is that, well, bikes are the sort of interlopers in that space. And if you look at this history, it's really the bikes. Bikes are there first.
Yeah, and it's really kind of sad. And in our conclusion, as we're wrapping things up, all of the bicycle industry that started in Wisconsin in the 1890s that just grows into one of the top 10 industries in the state in a matter of just a few years. All of the famous racers, all the famous wheelmen, once the bicycle boom had basically ended by 1900, they jumped right on the next fad, which was, at that time, steam-powered automobiles. Mm-hmm. And even our cycling magazines that existed in Wisconsin in the 1890s, those even transitioned from being about bicycles to being about horseless carriage automobiles. So bicyclists really kind of created that early automobile and motorcycle culture in the state.
Right, the sort of antagonism that we read backwards from the past didn't really exist. They were very complicit in it as well and celebrated it.
All right, we're going to keep on talking with Nick Hoffman and Jesse Gant, co-authors of Wheel Fever, How Wisconsin Became a Great Bicycling State.
Now, how about you? Are you an avid cyclist? Do you think Wisconsin is a great place to ride a bike? What changes would you like to see made if you don't? And do you have a question about Wisconsin's bicycle history? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
And we'd also be curious about your favorite bicycling trails in the state. There's a lot of them here. Tell us which ones are your favorites. 1-800-642-1234. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio. And we're continuing our conversation now about bicycling in Wisconsin and its history with Nick Hoffman and Jesse Gant. They're co-authors of Wheel Fever, How Wisconsin Became a Great Bicycling State.
And we want to hear from you. Do you love bicycling in Wisconsin? And where do you like to ride your bike? City, country, you name it. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email, talk@wpr.org.
And Nick, I want to ask you, when did bicycles as we know it become available to everyone?
Well, we see that already in the 1890s, and our book really takes a strong look at that. And it's the safety model bicycle, which is essentially the same bicycle that we're riding today. Once that was mass-produced in the 1890s, the cost dropped down into $50, sometimes even lower for a very basic model. So we see African-Americans, women, the working class. We see a lot of people commuting to work during this time period. So by the 1890s, Wisconsin is called the leading division of the West for the League of American Wheelmen, meaning that it had the most riders and it was the most ambitious of all the states in the West for bicycling. So really, it's by the mid-1890s that the bicycle boom really reaches everyone.
Jesse, how do you explain that when Wisconsin is a state that has about 4 months of good bikeable weather? Ice and snow the rest of the time. Slight exaggeration, but yeah.
That's funny because we hear, we've heard a lot of talk about, you know, the state has this sort of natural environment that's conducive, and I think that's exactly right. Well, a lot of the time, it's actually not very helpful for riding your bike outside. Mm-hmm. The answer we settled on in the book after researching and working on this quite a while is really advocacy, and it's the passion of the state's riders. And I think, what does that mean? I think that means Wisconsin riders had a belief or a faith in the public, in the public sphere, in its parks, in its infrastructure, in its institutions, that really drove the early bicycling boom to heights that are kind of remarkable. Like Nick was saying, by 1895, there is no Western state that has more riders than Wisconsin. And if you think about that, that's kind of remarkable because you think of nearby cities like Chicago and the soaring population it had by the 1890s. Just demographically, Wisconsin is not well positioned to be a major bicycling destination, and yet, through its dedication, through its conviction in these early wheelman clubs, it does manage to become one of the leading divisions of the West.
Let's go to phones now. We've got John on the line from Kaukauna. Hi, John.
Good morning. Good afternoon, rather.
Hello. How are you doing? I'm doing okay. What do you think?
Well, I got a question for you. My wife tells me that years ago she dated a guy whose great grandfather invented the bicycle brake.
Okay.
And at one time, I'm assuming bicycles didn't have brakes. So How the heck did somebody stop?
That's a great question. Hats off to the guy or gal who invented the brake. Do you know the answer to that one, Nick?
Yeah, well, you'd have to be pretty old because the early high wheel models actually had what they called a spoon or a lever brake, which on those gigantic high wheels in the front, kind of like our modern braking systems, on the handlebar, there was a little lever that you could pull, and that spoon would sink down on the front wheel and slow it down. So it isn't what we would think of today for a braking system. It's very different than that because basically it's just putting friction on the front tire. But it was still a braking system. You wouldn't want to hit that too hard on a high wheel, though, because you'd probably tip right over and hurt yourself pretty bad, which was a common thing during that time period.
I bet. And there were no bike helmets then, I'm guessing.
No. There was such thing as taking a header. We have a glossary in the book of some fun terms that cyclists used during that time period, and taking a header goes right with high wheel braking.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that question, John. And let's move along to Carl in Fond du Lac. Hi, Carl.
Hey, how you doing? Talk about high wheels. I actually ride high wheels for kind of sport, kind of excitement, do a lot of parades and commemorative types of things. And it's a truly unique bicycle. People do not understand that there really is no braking system. You're direct link on the front axle, which means your legs are the brakes, your legs are the accelerator. When you need to slow down, you got the muscles in your legs. There is no clutching in there. There's no freewheeling.
Mm-hmm. Carl, how do you get on it? I looked at a picture and I thought, how, you guys said, even with a running jump, I could not get on it with a running jump. How do you do it, Carl?
Okay, let's not call it a running jump. Let's just call it, there's actually a foot peg about 18 inches, 16 inches off the ground. It sticks out the back about 3 inches. You really don't see it in the pictures. But what you do is you put your left foot on there and your right foot is on the right side of the smaller tire, which is probably like 10 or 12 inch tire, and the other one is probably 48 or 54 inch tall tire, and then you kind of hop along pushing it. The traditional handlebars are very, very straight on there, so you're kind of, if you're a short guy, you're kind of maxing out your arm reach, and then you kind of hop along three or four, like you're starting out on a scooter when you were 8 years old. Remember how you first used to learn to ride a scooter?
A little bit. I was more of a pogo stick gal, but yeah, interesting. Have you guys, Jesse, have you ridden one of these high wheelers?
Well, we're waiting for that challenge, I guess.
Not yet.
We haven't. Neither Nick nor I have actually ridden a high wheel. I don't know that we'd do it given the chance either.
I don't know. Yeah, it looks pretty more like something you'd see in a circus by a trained professional. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder, you know, how did the bicyclists of this first boom shape cycling as we know it today in Wisconsin? Because Wisconsin is, it's still right up there in rankings for bicycling-friendly states and cities. And, you know, we've got some major bicycling companies in Wisconsin. Do you see this as the direct lineage of this early culture?
Yeah, we think that we argue in the book that really there were a range of possibilities, a range of directions that cycling might have gone, beginning with that first period in the 1860s. And there's the sort of egalitarian wing of the bike movement, and there's the exclusionary wing of the movement and the sort of negotiations that happened between them. And the story we tell in the book is how a lot of those possibilities were foreclosed or shut down. We tend to think today, if we think of cyclists as pretty much recreational riders, I mean, that's really the sort of prototypical cyclist that comes to mind, is somebody who does it for fun, somebody that does it maybe out on a tour for tourism. But the sort of utilitarian commuter-style bicycling has never really been the most dominant form in the United States. And we think that one explanation for that might rest in the sort of exclusionary politics of its origins.
And, Nick, we've got about 30 seconds or so, but what do we still need to do to help Wisconsin's biking culture?
Well, we talk about that in our conclusion quite a bit. And one thing that we mentioned last night during our first talk is just kind of looking to other countries and how they're dealing with the bicycle boom and just how the global mapping of bicycling is changing. We look to Amsterdam as the leader, but we suggest that Wisconsinites may want to look to Colombia, Southeast Asia, where bicycling is having a larger boom, maybe even larger than Amsterdam. So there's examples that we could find all over the world. And then throughout Wisconsin, too. Historically, I think a lot of people wonder where Madison is in the book. And it's kind of interesting to see that Oshkosh, Appleton, Milwaukee, we may think of Madison as the cycling center today, but historically those were all much larger cycling centers than the city of Madison. So a challenge that we're giving a lot of cities that we'll be visiting is to look to Madison and think that at one point we were actually ahead of them. So there's a lot of great examples that I think people will see historically from the book that maybe will make them rethink about the bicycle and how it could play a greater role throughout the state.
All right. We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us today, Nick.
Thank you.
And Jesse, thanks to you as well.
Great to be here.
Talking to Nick Hoffman and Jesse Gant, co-authors of Wheel Fever, How Wisconsin Became a Great Bicycling State.
You can see him at Old World Wisconsin in Eagle on Sunday, September 15th. Also at the local store in Eau Claire, Thursday, September 19th.
Coming up next, we'll talk about the controversy surrounding the name of Washington, D.C.'s football team.
We'll go to the news with a song suggested by Simply Folk host Stephanie Elkins. Yom Kippur starts tonight. This is Tikkun Olam by Joe Jenks.